Okay, so we get started in these five verses. Verse 1, as I said last week, doesn't really capture what's going on. It's kind of funny in the actual Hebrew. But basically, Jacob is chastising the brothers for their lack of initiative when the obvious solution is right before their eyes. Okay, there's grain in Egypt. You know there's grain in Egypt. Now, why do you think we went through that last week? I think for a couple reasons. Because of the best of their knowledge, who is in Egypt?
Joseph,
right? And who do they probably not want to bump into? Joseph. But who are they going to bump into with God's providence? Of course, Joseph. Okay. Now, I think there is this opening verse gives us the clue about what's going to follow, which is this whole awakening of the brothers' consciences. Okay. So we're going to see how sin, unconfessed, can take root in your heart. It can become very hardened. We become easily blinded to it. And as we'll see as we go through this, oftentimes when we repeat a lie over and over again, what does it become?
The truth.
The truth, right? We start to talk ourselves into it, right? It's like the old fish story. You know, you caught a little minnow. About 20 years later, it's a monster, right? You know, and it fed 400 people. So the fact of the matter is that things that don't get confessed are going to fester, they're going to harden, and they'll start to become the truth in your mind. And that's a scary thing. Which provides us with a good implication, right? A guilty conscience may be suppressed or become dormant, but it never goes away until it is dealt with, right? So we do have these consciences that remind us of things. So the brothers in action is really less about confusion and more about the fact that Egypt is probably the last place that they want to go to, and they're hoping anything could potentially happen other than doing that. Yeah, it's where their father commands them to go, and off they go to Egypt. Now, who goes? All but Benjamin. Why does Benjamin remain? Okay, could be for a lot of reasons. It could be the favoritism again. We saw this favoritism that Jacob exercised towards Joseph. But probably more likely, it's the fact that he has lived with these 10 brothers, all these 10 sons, all these years. And I doubt he really trusts these sons in terms of what they might do. Now remember, Rachel is the one of his love. Benjamin's the only, in his mind, blood child left, okay? So he doesn't want to trust Benjamin to the brothers. So having lost Joseph, he's not going to risk Rachel's only surviving son. Now, let's move into verses 6 to 17. Somebody read those for me, please.
Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had had about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Then they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." Yet he said to them, "No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." But they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." And Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So we put them all together in prison for 3 days.
So I like David's inflection in there. That was quite good because he is speaking harshly. So he would be a good narrator for our Bibles. It is a good point of emphasis. So, remember last week we talked about this idea of my sanctified speculation on what was going on here. And I proposed really something from James Montgomery Boyce, which I thought was helpful, that kind of what's going on here is Joseph is somewhat reenacting the events that happened around the pit for him, right? So remember Joseph had come once and now he'd come the second time and the brothers were grumbling. You know, and they're probably saying to themselves quietly, "Here comes that crummy brother to spy on us again," right? Unspoken. Surely if they had spoken that, Joseph would have defended himself, kind of in the same process that we're going to see here. So I think deliberately, in terms of how God is leading Joseph through this process, he's laying down a lot of clues that they hopefully will get and understand about the process they're moving through. So whether you buy that or not, the purpose here is to probe the condition of the brothers' hearts. Okay, so this is what Joseph is immediately after in this first part of this whole reconciliation process. He wants to know whether there has been any heart change in these brothers, right? It's been almost 20 years now since he's seen them, and he wants to know what's happened in their hearts. Now, he goes about it very deliberately, okay? So the first thing that happens in verses 6 and 7 is we get kind of a summary overview of the section, and then we get the details that follow. Okay, so remember, oftentimes in Genesis, we as the readers are kind of given a picture of what's going to happen so that we can have a sense of what's going on, but yet the participants in the drama don't really know because it's going to play out as we go. So we kind of see this summary, get started. Joseph is reintroduced in verse 6, and what is notable about the reintroduction? What things are emphasized in verse 6 in this reintroduction?
Camouflages himself.
He does camouflage himself. That'll be a question. Hold on for that one in a second. Okay, that one's coming. Just verse 6 now. What is emphasized? What does it say? How is he described?
He's the governor.
Okay, he's the ruler over the land, right?
And he sells.
Yep. Right, okay, and he's selling things, all right? So what we're beginning to see is it demonstrates aspects of Joseph's dreams beginning to be fulfilled. Okay, so just go back to Genesis 37. Let's just bring those back to mind here. I'll read it. Genesis 37, where he had these dreams initially. And in verses 5 to 11, it says this. Then Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf." Then his brothers said to him, "Are you actually going to reign or rule over us? Or are you really going to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Now he had still another dream and related it to his brothers and said, "Lo, I have had still another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." Now he's bringing mom and pop into the equation here, right? He related it to his father and his brothers, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have had? Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. So obviously Jacob has some sense of, hey, God has communicated to him through dreams before. Perhaps he's communicating something there. So as we set out in verse 6 and Joseph is kind of reintroduced here, what do we see? We see this kind of initial fulfillment of his ruling and reigning. Okay, so we're beginning to see some of these dreams come to true. Now, what are the three things about Joseph's dreams that are highlighted? We already did it. Number one, he has become the supreme ruler, right? So picking up on the stars motif and so forth. Number two, he's become the food provisioner. Ken said that, right? So it picks up on the agricultural motif of the first dream. And then thirdly, his brothers have become subservient to him. Okay, now, albeit unknowingly at this point, they don't know it's Joseph, but yet it's a bit ironic. So it kind of picks up on this ruling over them theme, right? So we begin to see this start to play out, and it's interesting as we go through it. Now, verse 7 completes the introduction by telling us how he's going to deal with his brothers. What is his plan for dealing with his brothers? David's kind of said it in his reading.
He disguised himself.
Okay, Peggy got that one before. He's going to conceal himself, and he's going to deal with them assertively. Okay? So he's concealing who he is. He's not conveying. He could have told them right then, right? But he doesn't. So as Peggy noted earlier, right about that, okay, he conceals himself and he deals assertively with them. Now, why do you think he chooses to handle the reunion this way? Why doesn't he just come out and say who he is?
He's testing.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I think it's kind of both of those things. Okay, hold on. We're going to find out in just a second. Okay, in verse 9. But yeah, he is testing, okay? But there's also a bigger picture there. Now, what does Joseph speak roughly What does his speaking roughly produce in the brothers in their answer? What does it produce in the brothers, huh?
Authority.
Yeah, produce a sense of authority, and how do they respond to that? Absolutely right. That's exactly the word. It immediately puts them on the defensive. Okay, so clearly there is something in his tone that means business that these guys pick up on quite quickly. Okay? And how do we see that in the answer? How do you see that in his answer? How do you see that they're on the defensive?
Because he's asked, where did you come from? And they say where they came from and also the purpose of their coming.
Exactly right. Okay? So think of the last time somebody was pinning you down, right? And you're feeling on the defensive. What do?
You give more information.
Exactly. You start running at the mouth. All right? So if any of you have ever had to testify in a court of law, anybody ever had to do that? Okay, and what did the attorney tell you to do?
Only answer the question.
Button your lip, okay? Yes, no, don't opine. That's what he wants to do. He starts sucking you into that, and you're going to go right down the tubes, okay? So you see that, right? Immediately in their answer, they're asked where they're from, okay? And he already knows that. However, this gives Joseph an opening for his accusation, okay? So they now say we're from a different place. Now, in verse 8, Joseph's recognition is confirmed, and the lack thereof of the brothers is also confirmed, right? So in verse 8, it says, Joseph recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Now, why, on the one hand, did Joseph recognize them, and do you think they didn't recognize him?
Well, he hasn't been with them for 20 years.
Yeah, but he has.
So he, you know, I think, in logic, they would presumably look somewhat the same, and there would be a love it.
Okay.
As a brother away from them, they wouldn't have had any reason to acknowledge him.
Okay.
So, as a family unit, the 11 of them, he would get them.
Okay.
You know, blah, blah, blah,
David,
blah.
And then Jack.
He's probably speaking through a translator.
Yeah, he is speaking through a translator. That's a good one.
Definitely.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that one. That's certainly true. Jack.
As far as right. Always easier to recognize people in a group,
right?
Associate them,
right?
With each
right.
other.
That's spoken from the retired police officer back here. So be careful if you're in a group; he might accuse you of something. Yeah, Roger, and then
he's been Egyptianized. Yeah. Since he's a ruler over the Egyptians, they've taken him and garbed him in all of their clothes, their amenities, and that. Kind
yeah, his appearance has changed a bit. Did you have something else? How was your answer? Okay, well, good. You guys collaborated. We'll pay double. We'll pay double on that. Okay, Bobby.
They probably thought he was dead or a slave, not in that high position.
Yeah, okay. That's a big one, I think, too. Okay, forget whether they think he's dead or alive. Do you think they could have ever imagined that this brother, this pain in the neck that they got rid of, is now the number two guy? Roger.
But he already told them that he was going to.
Right. Doesn't mean that they bought it. I mean, come on. Well, that's right. Yeah, because they were upset with it.
They were in denial.
Yeah, they were in denial. There you go. That's right. Okay. All right. So all good answers. So Joseph's recognition is likely based upon their appearance and the fact that they were all together. Okay. Quickly did the math, saw them in a group. They certainly looked like Hebrews, and so he could quickly go through that. Joseph's brother's lack of recognition is, of course, his non-Hebrew appearance, right? So he's clean shaven. He's all decked out in Egyptian garb, so he looks very different. The exalted position, I think, is probably the one that's just beyond comprehension, right? So do you think they ever would have imagined, even with the dreams, that this really came true? And here he is, the number two guy in all of Egypt, right? And then, of course, a 20 years gap in time, but that would apply equally to each one of them. So it's been 13 years plus the first 7 years of the plenty, and now we're into the famine. So it's 20 plus years since they have seen one another. All right, so now we get back to the reason behind Joseph's approach to his brothers. This is kind of the big, kind of why he takes the approach in verse 9a. What is the reason? Why does Joseph take this approach?
Because of the dream.
Yeah, but what more? Because of the dream, yeah.
Well, see if they've changed. See if they've changed.
Well, no, it is tied into the dream. I'm kind of digging at something more. Because Joseph discerns the bigger picture, okay, of what's going on, which is what? God's sovereign hand in the fulfilling of the dreams, okay? So the dream has come to his mind. Okay, he sees them, what's probably the one thing that triggered it more than anything else? Right, the bowing down, right? He's like, hmm. Now, Joseph is pretty spiritual, right? So he's going to be thinking God's thoughts after him far more than the brothers. So I think he pretty quickly connects the dots when he begins to see this. And I think he very quickly recognizes God's providential hand in this process. Okay, so he is going to then begin acting accordingly and being led in that process. Now, what then is the bigger purpose in Joseph's approach to his brothers in verses 9b to 17, to the rest of the story? What's his bigger purpose now? We've kind of already said it. Audrey?
It's either break them down so they tell the truth.
Yeah.
Recall the deception of years ago.
Okay.
To see their character.
Yeah, okay. So I think he wants to foster recognition, as you both have said, and awaken their consciences, okay? He wants to foster recognition in them of their sin, and maybe secondarily he wants to get some family news. I mean, he knows these brothers are pretty treacherous also. He'd like to know if his father's still alive. He'd like to know if his brother Benjamin, his only true 100% blood brother, is alive. But primarily, I think it's to foster recognition. He's trying to wake them up to see if they've understood and kind of bring them through this process. Now, why does Joseph want to awaken their consciences? Why does he want to do that, ultimately?
Do you think even at this point he longs to move his family there to Egypt?
Yeah.
If he sees that they're destitute and he knows that he could provide for them, that already at this point he's thinking that?
Yeah, I think he's thinking along that scenario. Okay, at this point I would say he's recognizing and owning, he's wanting them to recognize and own their sin, okay? And he wants them to do that. Remember I said the overarching picture here is reconciliation. So what's the first step?
Forgiveness.
Okay, well, forgiveness on the part of the one sinned against, right?
They have to recognize
but this, right, the sinning party, you can go to them, right? We've had all this teaching on this. You can go to them and you can confront them with their sin. What do they have to do?
They have to recognize that they did it.
They got to acknowledge it. Okay, so I think he's trying to get them here to the first step on this road to reconciliation by recognizing and owning their sin, okay? So I think he's trying to draw them along in the process. So remember all the teaching we've had on forgiveness. What are the two parts? What are the two parts of of our forgiveness teaching? On the part who is sinned against, what that person has to do? No, you've been sinned against, okay? So you've been the one sinned against. So what do you have to do? Yeah, well, David said it. First thing you got to do is you got to unconditionally release the debt. Okay? I mean, unconditionally release the debt. Right? And that means you're not going to ask for any payment for it, anything. Okay? And it doesn't mean that you've got reconciliation in the relationship. It just says that you have released the debt. You're not going to hold it over their head. You're not going to bring it out 4 years later when you're arguing about a different subject. And God, for some reason, blessed women with great memories and men with short memories. Okay? But the fact of the matter is, you have released the debt. That's one part of the process, okay? The other part of the process is the pursuit of reconciliation with the sinning party. Okay? So this is what Joseph is doing in verses 9b through the rest of verse 17. He has released the debt, right? We know that Joseph has released the debt. We know the story. We know as we move ahead. Now he is moving towards reconciliation with his brothers. So if they're going to bring the family down, there has to be reconciliation before that happens. Okay, so now he is beginning to pursue that in the process. Now, what means does he use in these verses to begin this process of recognition in his brothers? He deploys two methods. What are the two methods that he uses here in 9b to 17?
He confronts someone what he thinks is
wrong. Exactly right. He confronts them verbally first, right? Okay, what else does he do?
Locks them up
for a little bit of quiet time, okay? All right, so you know, you get a timeout. They're getting a little timeout, right? There you go. Okay, that's exactly right, okay? He is going to confront them, and we see that in 9b to 13, and then he's going to put them in solitude to get them alone with their thoughts in the process, okay? Now, he starts with a verbal confrontation in 9b to 13, right? And he accuses them of being spies. You are spies, okay? my clicker just doesn't want to operate.
Click with me.
Which the brothers vigorously defend, right? So they defend first with logic, okay? So what's their first logical response to his claim that you're spies? How does he come back at them logically? It's kind of like, oh, you're kidding me. Go ahead. Right, and what is that reasonable explanation? What's that? Well, right, I understand. But how do they try to, well, how does he try to convince them they're not spies? They're all of one man, okay? So do spies travel in packs?
No. But they say that they're the servants of an honest man.
Yeah.
So if they were the servants of an honest man, and he's a religious man, that would tell them that they were not spies.
Well, that could be true too, okay? But, you know, these brothers aren't proving to be terribly religious right at this point in time. So,
I mean, playing the...
Yeah, playing the religious card, yeah. Kind of pulling out, okay. So I think they try to dismiss the accusation as improbable, right? First of all, we're sons of one man. So if we're really spies, would we risk the whole family?
No.
Okay, no, right? And spies don't normally travel in packs. They're usually a bit more covert in the process, all right? So they think they kind of try to appeal to him logically, like, hey, come on, dude, that doesn't make any sense. If we were spies, don't you think we'd be a little more stealthy than that? Okay, so that's kind of part one of his response. Okay, now what part of the brothers' continued defense in verse 11 might give Joseph some concern as to their heart condition?
We are honest men.
Really? Okay, you are honest men. Well, okay, so we're honest men. So they still don't recognize their depravity. Okay, they really still don't get it. Okay, in the whole process. Now, they probably think it's unlikely. Their assertion of honesty is likely what causes Joseph to press his charge, right? So he keeps going, okay? He hasn't gotten satisfaction as to what he thinks, you know, these brothers need to be recognizing, right? Upon which the brothers switch from logic to full disclosure, okay? So here's kind of like it goes in our day to day. You ever been in somebody says, can I be totally honest with you? No, just keep lying. It's much better that way. You know, it's kind of like, really? Why do people say that? Can I be told? So my first reaction to that is, so you've been lying up till now? And they don't usually know how to respond to that one after that one. But the fact is, it's kind of like, can we be totally honest with you? Okay, they're going to give him more disclosure. They're really trying to show that, hey, we're good guys, right? We couldn't possibly be spies. And what does Joseph learn in their reply? So they give him more information. What does he learn?
Who they are.
Benjamin's still around. Who else is still around?
His
Pop. That's right. Okay, so Pop and the brother are still around.
That's going to drive me nuts.
Okay, so full composition and disposition of the family. You think this battery's dead?
Maybe.
All right, we'll have to find another one. There are 12 sons of one man, okay, and one has remained with his father in Canaan. Okay, so Benjamin and Jacob are still alive. Then they have this other little statement, though, right? Literally in the Hebrew, it says, the one he is not. Okay, the one he is not. Okay, so this is not. Yeah. What is significant about the one is no more? What's significant about that statement?
They think he died,
right, for sure. But that the lie, and I said this earlier, had become the truth to them. Okay, so reminding us that this is the way and the danger with a long-standing lie. The longer it lingers, the more it starts to become the truth in your own head. Okay? We've all done it. I know. I know we have. Okay? And we have that process. So the brothers are making progress, but what little detail do they leave out in this comment about the one he is not? There you go. Why he is not. Right? So it's one thing to disclose that in their mind he's not, but they're certainly not fully disclosing how that happened, right? So maybe if they had at that point said, well, you know, here's the problem. We kind of set the young kid up and, I don't know, he's down here in Egypt somewhere. Maybe Joseph would have relented at that point. Who knows? But clearly, they're still hardened in their hearts. They're not where they need to be yet. So what should we conclude at this point? I think I just answered it. That the verbal confrontation has taken them part of the way, but not all the way. Okay, so it started to warm up their consciences a bit, but it certainly hasn't gotten them to ultimately where they need to be. Okay, yeah.
How would this work
Right.
Would maybe the older brother be the oldest, be the representative speaking
yeah.
before them?
Yeah, probably Reuben would have been doing the speaking. Yeah, because he was the oldest there. And Simeon, you know, but it would have been Reuben speaking collectively, probably for the family.
Well, that's another clue that when they have their names, he would have known their names, and they wouldn't have known his name because he wasn't going by Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
but he never calls them by their name.
No, but I mean, they would have called each other by name. And
well, that's right. And we're going to learn a little later, and something David pointed out a minute ago, that Joseph is dealing with them through an interpreter.
Right.
And so he knows what they're saying, right? Kind of like when we're in China. Katie knows what they're saying, and I don't have a clue. You know, so she's translating for me, and there's times when she has like this long thing, and I said 3 words, and then there's like 20 words, and she has 2. So I'm like, are you embellishing or changing or what? So it's interesting. You can figure it out after a while.
It's like Spanish. It's the same way.
Same way?
Same way in Spanish.
Yeah, it is funny.
We
so
say 3 words and we use 12.
It's funny, but it is interesting so far. We go through it. Okay, so verbal confrontation is taken a part of the way. Now, this leads Joseph to step 2, right, in verses 14 to 17, which is what? You've already said it. What's his next move? Right, incarcerates them. He locks them up in confinement, right? Which is surely ought to get them thinking, right? What did they do to him? They locked him up in confinement, okay? So they've just acknowledged that one is no more. So clearly Joseph's on their mind. And I guess Joseph's trying to give them a little bit of a clue here, maybe to try to help them along. So he locks them up to see if they can get their minds going. Oh, yeah, you know, we locked the kid up and, you know, just try to get him moving down the process, right? So maybe he reasons that they need a little quiet time, right, to quicken their consciences, which really is, I think, quite brilliant, right, and gives us a couple of interesting implications. The first is he's not being mean-spirited, but he's teaching us what? We do need to get alone, and we need to be quiet sometimes if we're really going to come to grips with our own sin in our own life, right? Because, simply put, the mind does not naturally go to reflection when we're busy, right? So what of us, many of us do? Busy, 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 right? If I stay busy, 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 I don't have to what?
Think,
all right? So I think there really is kind of an interesting thing. He wants to get them alone. He wants them to be thinking. And I suspect, you know, he wants them talking amongst themselves, right? And we're going to see some of that come back. So he locks them up for 3 days with this kind of initial plan, right? I'm going to lock you all guys up. I'll send one back and bring back the brother, okay? So, somebody read verses 18 to 25 for me.
Now Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and this, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go carry grain for the famine of your household. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words may be verified, and you will not die. And they did so. Then they said to one another, who we are guilty concerning our brother, we saw the distress of his soul when we pleaded with us. When he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered them, saying, did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy? And you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood. They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. He turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simon from them and bound him before their eyes. Then Joseph gave orders to fulfill their bags with grain and to store every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. and thus it was done for them.
Okay, so Joseph has used now confrontation and solitude to bring recognition to the brothers in 8 to 17. What does he resort to now in 18 to 25? What is he going to introduce into their lives to get them thinking even more?
He's a God-fearing man.
What's that?
He's a God-fearing man.
Yeah, that's one thing. We'll get to that in a second. He is a God-fearing man. But what method is he using now in this next section to bring his brothers again to recognition?
Hostage,
okay, yeah. What's that?
He's creating trouble.
There you go, okay. A consequent trial. Okay, he's going to create a consequent trial for them, reminding us that God will do whatever it takes to get our attention about persistent sin. Right, so one of the things that I always look for when I've got a recurring problem in my life, something that kind of keeps coming back and biting me in the heels, I generally would try to go get a little quiet time, a little time out, and find out what in fact it is that I'm harboring that God's just going to keep bringing back to my attention in the process. So he's going to introduce this trial, okay, to get these guys thinking more. Now, how does he know that this demand is going to result in a trial? Exactly right. Okay, first because he knows they're going to need more food. Okay, so he knows he's going to send them back and they're going to have to come back. But that's not the big reasons. It's as she said. Second, because he knows how stressful it's going to be for them to convince their father. Right? He knows this is not going to be an easy task. It's going to cause all kinds of stuff to get stirred up. And they're going to have to bear the weight of that to somehow convince their father, perhaps hoping that they're going to come clean and confess to their father, but not quite yet. Okay, so after 3 days in the clink, Joseph brings them out, details a new plan. What reason does he give for the new plan, Audrey?
Because he fears God.
Because he fears God, okay, which should have been a thought-provoking comment. They shouldn't have missed the implication because the Hebrew is very specific here. They would not have missed it. I fear the God. The article is there. It's not often there. It's right there. I fear the God. So he's being very clear. Not I'm fearing gods, right? They think he's an Egyptian. All right? So I fear the God. Or also, the fact is that it's an abnormal construction. So Hebrew is usually verb, subject, object is the way sentences go. This is the God I fear. So whenever you see that order, it's also intended to convey emphasis. So he's emphasizing that aspect. Now, what is he actually doing, do you think, by saying that he fears God?
Maybe putting the fear of God into them.
Well, yeah, he'd like that to be the case, but I don't think that's it.
Dropping a hint.
Dropping a hint, yeah, he's doing that. Okay, he's kind of swearing by God that he's going to honor the deal. Okay, he starts before the deal by saying, look, I fear God. Okay, so he's indicating that by the fear of God, this is what I propose, and I'm going to follow through. You need to follow through on your part, and I'm going to follow through on my part. Because look, they're dealing with they think they're dealing with an Egyptian who he would double deal them without anything thinking about it. So in that process, then, he's saying, look, I fear God, you do this, and I will do that in the process. We're going to see that play out.
That's what now, I was referring to as far as building it, trying to build a trust.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, trying to build a trust that way and go through there.
Right.
Okay, so despite the disclosure, nothing in the text indicates a reaction from the brothers other than their compliance in verse 20. Okay, they don't seem to have any recognition to this. The new plan will only hold one brother in custody, by which news the brothers were surely heartened, right? But then the shoe drops in verse 20, right? The shoe drops. Joseph reconfirms and stresses the requirement to return with their brother to prove their innocence. Okay, so this is the trial that he is introducing into the situation. No brother, no tiki, okay? You got to bring your brother back or you're not going to get any more food. He knows this is not an easy thing to do. And they did so, okay, it doesn't mean that they brought their brother back. All they're saying is, yeah, okay, we agree to the deal. We'll head out and do what we're doing, okay? Now, in verses 20, 21, we give rise to my title for the section, The Embers of Reconciliation. And so why do I entitle it that way without giving you the answer first? Why so?
Because they're acknowledging that they are being punished because of their brother.
Okay, so not they so much. For the first time, they openly acknowledge and confront their sin. Okay, so as a group, they begin to acknowledge and confront their sin. Okay, so they're recognizing he is moving them along in the process. Now, why is that important? Right, first step again. Confession is the first step on the road to full reconciliation. Okay, they've got to confess and own the sin before they can start to move through the process. Now, they're still a far way from the finish line, and why is that? What's lacking in their confession?
It looks like they're not unified because the one Reuben is basically accusing the other.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. Exactly right, okay? They're not confessing to the people they ought to be confessing to, right? They need to be confessing. Now, they don't know this is Joseph, so they get a pass on that. But they should have to confess it to their father. They've never told their father. They've let him believe that he died. Now, that's cruel, right? That's pretty cruel. You know, how do you live with that lie constantly? Well, you start to believe it's the truth, right? Nevertheless, it's an important and necessary step. Now, what else is important in owning their sin? What else is important in owning their sin? And I forgot to answer this one.
Well, they should have remorse for it.
Yeah, there should be some remorse for it. I'm going to say, to recognize that lingering unresolved sin produces consequences, okay? Here, they call it now their present distress, okay? Their present distress. Now, the recognition is important, but where do 9 of the 10 brothers come up short in verse 21? Where do they come up short? 9 of the 10 come up short. One of them does not. Where do they come up short in their recognition? What's Reuben's point? At the end of 21.
The reckoning,
okay. All right, so they fail to recognize or acknowledge that unconfessed sin will ultimately lead to judgment. Okay, so they're kind of batting this around. Must be because we threw the kid in the pit. And yeah, okay, right? But they don't recognize the real emphasis here, which is that it's going to require a reckoning. That's a very specific word in the Hebrew there, a reckoning for the brother. Okay, but the truth doesn't escape Reuben. What does he link their sin to in verse 22? And this is the idea of a reckoning or an avenging or punishment for the sin. Okay, so Reuben has now jumped ahead in the process. He has made some understanding and he's acknowledged that, didn't I tell you not to do this? Didn't I tell you it would cause trouble? Now we're going to have a reckoning for his blood. Okay, so they genuinely do believe he died, or they've at least convinced themselves of that, right? But whatever that means at that point. So the idea is that something is required for Joseph's blood, literally in the Hebrew, and now his blood, behold, a reckoning. Okay? So now his blood, behold, a reckoning. So Reuben gets it. He's getting in the process. Now, he was the voice of reason then. Remember? He was the one that said, brothers, don't do this. And he is now the voice of recognition now. So kind of interesting. You know, Reuben, despite his other shortcomings, you know, shows a little bit more discernment in this whole process. Well, it takes place in Joseph's hearing, and it brings Joseph to tears, right? Which tells what, or reveals what about Joseph's character?
Loves them.
Yeah, he loves them, specifically his compassion, right? So Joseph wept at his brother's distress. What did they do at his distress? They ate and rejoiced, right? So you see a very different character amongst Joseph and his brothers, but yet he see his compassion on full display. But you also see something else I think is kind of interesting, and that is his patience, okay? So Joseph recognizes that God is driving the ship right now. He's recognized that this is perhaps the beginning of the fulfillment of his dreams back in 37. He is patient to work through the process. If he's so compassionate, I'm sure, what? He wanted to tell his brothers, right? But he doesn't. He has to go away, cry, get them all cleaned up, right, and come back in. So he is patient. He's waiting for God's plan to work out, right? Now, I think we had the Q&A on Sunday night, and I believe I said one of my sins was a lack of what?
Patience.
Patience, right?
Well, the shortest verse in the Bible is he wept.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this again is the paralleling of the two.
Yeah, right. You see the contrasting character of the brothers. I mean, he wept, right? He got...
No, I mean as far as Christ.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. He wept. Joseph. Yeah, exactly right. You see another parallel there.
Right.
But Joseph wept here too, okay? Yeah, exactly right. Okay, so his compassion, but also his patience, all right? He's going to let it play out. He's going to let God drive how this process is going to play out along the way. Now, why does Joseph select Simeon for custody? Okay, Simeon didn't offer himself. He said he grabbed Simeon and he bound him. Why does he bind Simeon and not Reuben? Reuben's the oldest, right? He likely would have been the one that would have been bound.
Reuben would have been the one that has the leadership in the group, and Simeon would have been the next. So in the stature of Hebrew law, he would have been the one that needs to go and talk to the father.
Well, that's right.
Simeon would have been the next in line.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
In order.
Right. That's going to be later. Why does he now not take Reuben? Because Reuben's the oldest.
But
you would have bound him.
He needs to go back and talk to the father
because
of being the eldest.
But it could go to the next one. That's not really the...
Suppose that he sees that Reuben gets it, and if he held Reuben back, then the other bunch would all go grumbling and down the wrong path, where if Reuben's there, maybe he can teach them on his way.
Yeah.
He's the one that pulled him out of the pit, too.
Yeah.
Since Reuben, the first time around, was the one who said, hey, you ought not to do this. He was the oldest.
Right.
The next oldest, Simeon.
Right.
So in a sense, the responsibility would have fallen on him as now being the next oldest to lead the rest of the brothers to, yeah, let's go ahead and do this.
Yeah, right. But the simple answer here is he bypasses Reuben, I think, simply because of what he learned in verse 22.
Right.
Remember what he said. He's understanding through translators. They don't know. So he's hearing for the first time that Reuben wasn't part of the plot.
Again.
Right? Mm-hmm. So he is. Now, I think all these other reasons are right, too. Right? If you want to send one back that maybe is going to have a better chance of getting it to their father and maybe doing more full disclosure, Reuben might be the one candidate. But I think it's pretty simply because Joseph says, oh, my goodness. He's the one guy that didn't do it, okay? He didn't want to do it. So he does that, and he moves on to the next oldest one, who is Simeon, okay? So he binds him up and takes him along. Now, as the firstborn, Reuben would have been the natural one, learning Reuben has against the brother's scheme, he moves on to the next oldest, who is Simeon. Okay, come on.
Back when they threw him in the pit, isn't he the one that got him out?
Yeah.
He wanted to, yeah.
He
wanted to. He came back to gape him out, but
yeah.
He's already gone. Jack.
Would Reuben have been the most likely to convince Jacob to let Benjamin?
Yeah, could be. Could be. Don't know. I mean, he, as the oldest, just by definition, would have been the one to approach their father. But he's indeed not the one that does it, right? Who's the one that ultimately is going to convince his father? As we get further in the chapter here.
It's Benjamin.
No. Maybe some in the next chapter. I can't. Yeah, it's going to be in chapter 43. Who's ultimately going to convince him? Judah. Okay? Judas is the one that's ultimately going to convince him. Reuben comes up with this kind of lame, you know, plan at the end of the chapter, which we'll get to in just a second. So, yeah, I just think it's simply because he heard that Reuben wasn't part of the plot. So he's going to bind Simeon. He's the next oldest, and that's just kind of passed him over. Now, what's going on in verse 25? What's happening in verse 25?
He's setting them up by putting the money back.
Okay, so you think he's setting them up. What else? What else? Any other opinions?
No, he's showing his generosity.
Okay, so you think he's showing generosity. Okay, that's good. That means you guys are figuring out what these different commentators say. There are different interpretations. Okay, some say he is setting up the brothers to further accuse them as thieves. Okay, that's
or to see if they'll be honest about it.
Well, okay, that's a good point. And how would he have expected them to be honest about it?
Return the money.
Right.
Return the money. When?
Well, they have to come back.
Right, and they do.
Yeah.
Okay, but maybe if you're going to go down that argument, I would say they don't think they were that far out.
No.
Why didn't they turn back around and give it back to him right then? True. Okay, so that's possible. Okay, so some say he's setting the brothers up to further accuse them as thieves. Others say, right, others posit it to be another test. Will they return when they discover the money, right? Or they just go back home and hope the famine will be over and the food will be done and I can just ignore the whole thing again like I did all the other stuff. And others say it reflects Joseph's grace, his grace driven by his compassion for his brothers. Okay, so we know where you landed, we know where you landed. Where does everybody else land? What do you think? Which option do you like and why? It's not a trick question. No other brave ones, huh? Just these two brave ladies up front. All you men are squirking and shirking behind the chairs back there, huh? All right, so I like door number three, okay, which is compassion and grace. Okay, because it's consistent with his character. That's one of my reasons. And then I have to look ahead a little bit, which I said I never can, you're not allowed to do, but I did, okay? So one is that because the steward will reassure them when we get to chapter 43. They're going to come back. They are going to bring the money back, double. Okay, so back to your point. They're going to demonstrate their honesty when they have to, okay? But then they appeal to the steward, and the steward says something amazing to him. Well, don't worry about it. I know that you gave us the money. Your God is taking care of you. God, capital G, in that situation. But thirdly, looking a little further ahead, Joseph doesn't pursue them. Okay? He does pursue them in chapter 44, right? When he puts the goblet in Benjamin's sack. So he doesn't do it. So I think this is just simply a reflection of his grace and compassion. He's not going to take money to care for his family, right? So it is interesting that they don't have a clue that it could be somebody caring for them. Right? Isn't it interesting? I mean, look at the brother's character. It doesn't even occur to them somebody would be doing something nice. Because why?
They're not nice.
Exactly right. They wouldn't do it, right? So why would anybody do it for me? Okay, and perhaps trying to get them, again, more clues as to his identity. Yet despite his grace, God in his sovereignty chooses to use it to accomplish his greater purpose. So read 26 to 28, please. Okay, interesting. So what's of central importance in these verses? What's the most important line in these verses?
What has God done to us?
Yeah. What has God done to us? Okay, so this is finally the brothers beginning to recognize God in his hand in their present distress. Okay, so remember, the embers of reconciliation and the dawning of the of recognition that God's hand is in this process, okay? This is the first time in some time that the brothers have mentioned God. Now, they obviously grew up, right? Highlighting how different they are from Joseph, who constantly spoke of God, right? The whole Joseph story is giving credit, glory, and honor to God in everything he does before he interprets any of the dreams ever, right? Now, his brothers, on the other hand, you know, it's like they don't care. So they've kind of been doing. Now, why is this important? Because they recognize that God will not allow their sinful actions to go unpunished, right? Reminding us that God is not forgetful of their sin, okay? And like ours, he has seen it, he remembers it, and he will bring it to light, okay? There's no such thing as hidden sin. It always comes out, one way or another, over time. The only question is how ugly it's going to come out in the process, and how much God's going to have to turn the tourniquet on you to get it out. He just won't abide by it. So up to this point, they've lived as functional pagans, I suspect, despite the very real likelihood that their father spoke of God. They probably had the terms, right? So they're kind of functional, you know, religious people, but not really believing. They knew of God, but they probably didn't know God necessarily in their process. Now, ironically, what Joseph meant for good, God does choose to use for their conviction, right? So Joseph's motives are pure. God is using that circumstance to accomplish his purposes in the next step. So brothers are unaware of how the money got there, but they are not ignorant of its providential significance. Yet they still not where they need to be, as the next section will indicate. 29 to 34. Ken.
They came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan. They told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man, the ruler of the land, spoke harshly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no longer alive, and the youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. The man, the lord of the land, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your households, and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.
Okay, now, the brothers demonstrate an honesty in this section that is commendable, but for two things. What two things are they still not honest about? Right, they haven't really said anything about the one who is not, right, and how that all came about. What's the other thing they're not quite honest about? What do they do at the end of verse 34?
Trade.
Trading the land.
Yeah.
Does Joseph ever say that?
No.
So what are they doing?
They're
embellishing, right? They're putting a spin on it. They've entered the spin zone, right? Okay, they're putting a little spin on the situation and try to make it, hey, it's going to be all good. Come on back. We can trade in the land. No big deal, all right? They know it's going to be a problem. They're pre-selling the deal to their father a little bit, okay? But again, these guys are deceitful, right? They just don't have it in them to come clean with the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Okay, so they don't admit their hand in selling Joseph, despite their confession, right? They admitted it to themselves, but they can't quite bring themselves to admit it to their father. Now, they probably realize that they shouldn't, right? And they're not trusting the Lord to work it out, because if they told him, do you think their father would send Benjamin with him?
No.
Well, and then God's going to make sure it happens. How does God make sure it happens? How does he put the squeeze on Jacob? How does God put the squeeze on Jacob? What? Yeah, they're out of food.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, the famine's going to go on for another 5 years. So they can't avoid this, okay? But the fact of the matter is, they're not going to try to make their job any harder to convince their father to go back and get more food, okay? They add to Joseph's words, which was the other one, and you may trade in the land, perhaps trying to put a positive spin on a bad situation, okay? So these guys just can't help themselves. They're always trying to do something. Maybe unintentionally, however, prophetic, right? Because indeed, they are going to go down and trade in the land. They're going to become prosperous in the land. That's how God's ultimately going to do it. I don't really think they're intending to be prophetic. If they are, it's just unintentional. Okay? So 35 to 38, I'll read it to finish this up. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks that, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. Their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. And you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I'll return him to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol, meaning death or the grave, in sorrow. Okay, so opening all their sacks, they now discover that all their money's been returned. Now, what is right and what is wrong with Jacob's response to the revelation? Part of his response is right, and part of it's wrong. What's the right part?
Well, that Joseph is no more.
Okay.
He doesn't think Joseph is anymore.
That's true. Yeah, that's. What's that?
You have bereaved.
Yeah, okay. I think right is he's correctly fearful that this could spell trouble. I mean, he doesn't know what's going on. He would have no reason to have any conclusion that it's grace, but he's that. But where he's wrong is he's forgotten God's promises and prior faithfulness, right? I mean, isn't this the same guy that went up there, got dealt with Laban, got all kinds of stuff, encountered his brother, right? That went well, right? All the different kind of things, and God has promised him over and over again that he's going to care for him.
Yeah, but isn't that human nature?
Well, yeah, it is, but that doesn't mean that God doesn't want us to understand his nature.
Well, to me, the point is that he's acting the same way that we would do. I mean, confronted that.
Right. Yeah, but I think
so
he's...
it makes him somebody that we can relate to.
Well, I get that, but he's also had quite a few more promises than you and I have gotten.
That's true.
Okay, and he's seen God fulfill those promises, maybe more than some. Yeah, Roger.
About God in this, because God's already told him in Joseph's dream that they're going to bow down to him.
Yeah.
But right. God is still in control of this.
Right. So Jacob is still being Jacob, right? Jacob was a capable guy, just like his son Joseph. He's relying on his own flesh and his own things for dealing about it. God's going to squeeze him. We'll get to that next week, okay? When we get into chapter 43, he's going to keep going. Bobby.
And doesn't he embellish kind of too, because he says Jacob is assuming he's dead too.
Right. Well, in his eyes, he's as good as dead. He doesn't believe the Egyptian guy, right? So yeah, you're right. He doesn't see any way out. So I'm down 2, and you want me to be down 3, okay? So, you know, he didn't seem to express any great love for Simeon before, right, and his impetuousness, but yeah, so we see the right and the wrong. I think the key is he has totally forgotten about God and God's promises. He's forgotten about where he's placing or should be placing his trust, right? Sees that nothing but doom falls, and he goes into Eeyore mode, right? Everything's against me. Really? Come on, Jacob. Right? But as I think Ann did point out, we do tend to fall into this trap, right? Do it all the time. Oh, man, you know, God's against me. Nothing's working out. But in fact, maybe exactly everything is working out, right? Because God is working all things together for good, right? For those who love him. So do you really believe those? Jack?
The bit about the money, I mean, they discover on their way back that the money had been restored.
One. Only one sack was opened. They didn't look in the other sacks.
Which is kind of weird in itself.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Converse, the brothers, it wasn't just the one brother who said, wow, what's all this money doing here?
Right. Right.
All the brothers knew that at least some of the money had been returned.
Sure. Yeah.
And they didn't say anything to their father. And then it was open up all the sacks and now here's all this money. And
yeah.
Well,
that's right. Yeah, and same point. I think it's a good point. I mean, just continue to see the kind of half-truth nature of the brothers, right? I mean, they just can't quite bring themselves to kind of lay out the whole thing. Like, yeah, Pop, man, we came back. You know, we didn't even want to look in the other sacks because we didn't want to find money there. But the fact of the matter is, yeah, they don't. They don't disclose, you know, the whole thing along the way. They're just kind of bleeding out information. Right. No, I don't think you're reading too much into it. That would have been, that was one of my questions. Why did the other guys look?
I'm gonna check mine and see if mine.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have figured that out. Or
if we don't know, then we won't be guilty.
Yeah, or right. That's equally likely too. You know, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. The three monkeys. Okay. So the fact of the matter is I don't know. Why don't they look? I agree with you, Jack. I had the exact same thing and you said the same thing too, Sue, which is you'd think they'd look, and if they were really only a day or two out, would they have sent an emissary back and sent the money, or, you know, who? There's all kinds of questions, but God's in charge. He's doing it. Now, what do you make of Reuben's offer? Just opinion. It's no
Well, Reuben. It goes to the fact that he's the eldest brother.
Right.
And that the lineage of his sons, and he's willing to give up his sons if his father doesn't believe.
Yeah. So look, I think it's probably sincere, but I think it's kind of pitiful, right? Number one. Number two, oh, you give the kids up? What about you? Right? Yeah, you know, what kind of guy are you? Now, as we get ahead, Judah's going to actually put himself as the surety, right? Bobby, did you have a comment?
How could losing 2 grandsons
satisfy
the father? I mean.
Exactly right, which is the next point. How is killing 2 innocent kids going to make him feel any better about the process? Well, that's a very good point. I didn't think of that. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So it's kind of, maybe it's not quite so sincere. Maybe it's quite disingenuous. Right?
I can't take credit. It's a MacArthur point.
Okay. Well, he gets a point every now and then, right? But, you know, if you've been out of 50 years, you're bound to get a couple things right. But the fact of the matter is that is a good point. I mean, it's like, you know, but it is kind of insincere and it's pitiful. Like, what are you going to do in the process? Okay. So despite all the trials, you know, Joseph never, no, so kind of closing, that was the end of it. So just kind of closing a couple thoughts here. I think one of the things that it just constantly gets back to me about Joseph is despite all the trials that he has, all the things that go wrong, he never resorts to vengeance. He didn't do it with Potiphar. Now he's the head dog. He could go back and get Potiphar if he wanted, nor towards Potiphar's wife. Nor the cupbearer, right? Nor his brothers. He just constantly is returning good for evil, right? So I think he's kind of the poster child. Let's kind of end with that. Turn to Romans, and really is kind of a good application point. You know, Paul's gone through this magnus opus of his theology in the first 11 chapters of Romans, and then he starts to apply it, you know, apply these things in salvation in the remaining chapters. But in verses 14 to 17, or 14 to 21, we have this. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Joseph certainly demonstrates that. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. That's easy to do, right? Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. All right, so there's a nice command. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Okay, so you don't have to be the one to bring the justice. God's going to bring the justice as it's going to happen. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. And if he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Right? So as you are responding to evil with good, you are heaping coals on your enemy's head, right? Have you ever been in an argument with somebody when you don't argue back? They run out of gas, don't they? There's nothing they can do. So, you know, to the extent that you can return good for evil, we're looking at this good application. I think Joseph is the embodiment of that as we've gone through it, okay? So don't suppose that you can hide your sin, for it will find you out. Numbers 32 and 23. Okay?